accession number 20588, Reel 4.
No doubt about it.
This is Walter Cass, Reel 4. Right, you just told me about some particular incidents. So, on our chronological tour through Normandy, where have we got to now? And do you know what the date might be? You landed on June the...
Oh, about June the 26th we landed, yeah, something right. Like that.
So, how many days on are we now?
Well, you see, you can't sort of look at the dates. Nobody... the dates were immaterial at that particular time because it was high summer, weather like this. And of course, we had the huge aircraft now, a bomber raised to try to bomb Caen, and we shifted from one front to another and over different divisions. We were relieving them and they were relieving us. So it was rather confused, a lot of it, you see.
How often were you moving? I mean,
well, engineers don't move so much as infantry because the basis of engineers, as I said earlier, they operate with a brigade, one company. Now, you've got a forward engineer reconnaissance unit, which may be the CO or any particular platoon that's going up there, and they stop with infantry brigade headquarters. Mm-hmm. Infantry battalion headquarters, rather, regiment like Rollers Fusiliers Maine, we used to operate with. Go to their headquarters. If they require engineering assistance, like moving roadblocks or craters in the road or anything like that, we go up there and repair them. Or if they've too big the craters, they'd be bridged, bailing bridging. And so we didn't move all that much. Mm. We might move 5 or 6 miles in a day sometimes, and might not move at all.
So, I mean, you've obviously seen on a map the route you took.
Oh, yes, I know where the route we took, yeah.
Right.
And then, I'd say with dribs and drabs, bits and pieces, mm. things like that, different jobs.
So, yeah, going on from...
Pick up a minefield. Mm. I mean, there was one case where our chaps had to go out and lay a minefield, or lift a minefield, I'm not sure which. Anyhow, when you go out through the front lines, you form an infantry in the area that engineers are moving forward to do a particular job, and they'd be moving back. Well, anyhow, through a process of elimination, the infantry weren't told, and the chaps coming back after laying the minefield were taken prisoner because they thought we were Germans. I wasn't on it, but men in my company were. They thought they were Germans, and they'd be interrogated and that sort of thing. Things like that could happen quite often.
Can you remember one particular place and one particular job you had to do there that you can tell me about?
Well, a section might go out and lift a minefield, which quite often, of course, in the infantry you had what he called pioneers. Now, Montgomery have always said he didn't have enough engineers. Anyhow, in the infantry you had a section of men called pioneers, and they used to lift. If we weren't available, they'd lift mines themselves. They were trained to do so. Not lay them, but lift them. Because when a minefield is laid, it's got to be laid on a map, a map reading, as the Geneva Convention states that. It's got to be laid in a certain position, wherever the compass bearing is, it's got to be set down, and all this sort of business. So a lot of that went on, and a lot of mines lift. Miscellaneous jobs, too numerous to mention, really.
Can you remember some particular places, you know, named towns or villages? Or
no way, no way.
You didn't know, I suppose, at the time where you were?
Well, no, there was no signposts or anything. Well, signposts were all smashed up.
Did you have any idea of how the campaign was going?
Well, there again, you see, it was so much going on. He didn't sort of realise it, but I mean, they thought they were going to capture Caen D+2, but they didn't. Didn't capture it to about D-something, 20-something, something like that, I think. Towards the end of July, beginning of August. Yeah, end of July, beginning of August, before Caen was actually captured. And then they, I mean, they bombed Caen with nearly 1,000 bombers on two occasions, the Americans and British. They really pulverised the place.
Did you go there?
No. Yeah. We were on the southeast of Caen. Eversay and Esquay was two particular places. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example now. We went down on a half track. This Sergeant Egley and myself went down on a half track to take rations down to this water point. We were on the main Caen road or just off it. That's where we were hanging out. So now, Austin Egley, he was a sergeant, but he was a great friend of mine. We got on very well together. We did a lot of things together. And he said to me, he said, we go back the other way now. I said, don't you so bloody stupid. I said, you got a salient on the road. The Caen road was going down like that. And the Germans had a salient, what do you call a point? That's a salient. Mm-hmm. Across the road. I said, we better not go down there. I said, we don't exactly know where we are. Anyhow, we went down this road and we came to... And as we were going down the road, as I said, the road was sunken. And all of a sudden, we could hear this spattering going on with machine gun fire, you see, hitting the side of the vehicle. And to cut a long story short, when we got back, you could see all the paint had been flaked off and the bullets hitting it, you see. On the crossroads, we seen a Tiger tank. And it wasn't knocked out. And it was facing the other way to what we were going. I said, turn left here and bugger off down this road as fast as we can, I said. Because if he'd have been this way facing, I wouldn't be talking to you. Because we'd have no chance, anyhow. What I said to him was nobody's business. But there again, it's an instance where if the place was very confused at that time, different things, you see.
So, were you aware that the Allied forces were pushing in the direction they wanted to go?
Oh, yes, I had all groups. OC used to give us all groups. You should have a big map marked up and all the positions, the German positions and our positions on it. But he obviously didn't know any more than localised news, you see, local, coming from brigade headquarters, something like that.
So tell me about those O group, was it you called it?
An O group is an officer group, known as an O group. Mm. They discuss tactics or whatever it's going to be, or what we were going to do. He'd get an order from brigade, no doubt, that we're going to do a certain job at a certain time and who was going to do it. Mm-hmm. And all those responsible for it, going to do the job, would be called to an O group. Mm-hmm. And they'd understand what their position was and what they were going to do. You see, in an engineer unit, you've got platoons, as I told you. One platoon might go out and do a specific job, the other two might not. They might not do anything up a particular day. Some other time, another platoon would go out, that sort of thing. And the 53rd Division didn't operate basically as a division in Normandy with brigades. You see, you could switch a brigade to support some other outfit. Like for instance, 164 Brigade might be supporting 43rd Infantry Division, or another time they'd be supporting somebody else, and vice versa. Or we might have a tank brigade attached to us under our orders. Mm. You see, we're very flexible in that sort of thing.
Right.
Okay. And all this was based on German ideas. We use a lot of German ideas as regards troop operations and things like that. Mm.
So, all this time you were in Normandy, I mean, you were, what, living under canvas?
No, living in foxholes.
Mm. What was that like? How tough was that?
Well, it's full of dust and everywhere, you see. Another thing, you see, if you notice is everywhere, dust mean shells. Now, on the Caen Road, we had a water tanker, a French water tanker, which we converted to spray water on the roads. And one of our chaps has to go up there at night with a half track, towing this water container up and down the road to keep the dust down. Mm. Now, the Germans were crafty. If they saw a convoy, they'd shell the convoy, but they'd knock the first vehicle out, they'd knock the last vehicle out. So the vehicles in between couldn't go anywhere, and they were systematically knocked out one by one. And that's how it went on.
So, I mean, your living conditions, you were in foxholes, so what were you eating?
Well, you were in you dig a foxhole, you had to dig, the first thing you'd done is dig a foxhole, you'd go and mainly we should try and get corrugated sheet, anything to put over the top, you see, so you can get in there. If a shell hit or a mortar, you'd have enough earth and stuff on the top for it to not penetrate. Mm.
So how deep would your foxhole be?
Well, it's about 6 foot, something like that.
Uh-huh. And how many in that?
Well, two men, something like that. It's all a corner. How ambitious you were. You could make a good thing out of it, you know. You could have run a light off the vehicle or something down there. You'd even have a pocket radio if you had it down there. Because all we had radios issued to the regiment, like, you know.
What, field radios?
No, little radios. Something like that.
So what did you listen to on the radios?
Well, British Forces programmes and things like that. Mm-hmm. Well, it's well organised. You soon have it organised. You even have a newspaper later on. Oh, it's well organised.
What would you listen to on the radio? I mean, can you remember any programmes or music?
Different to say. What would you say? Vera Lynn, Alan Shelton, programmes that existed then, I can't remember them now, too long ago now.
What about supplies, food, cigarettes?
All compo packs. Right. As I told you, 40 men compo packs consisted of cube tea, cube sugar, cube milk, toilet paper, sweets, cigarettes, tin bacon, soya beans, tin bacon, treacle pudding, stewed steak, compo packs, McConaughey stew, all that sort of stuff. Marmalade, apricot jam, and a typical breakfast would consist of tin bacon, tin of baked beans or corned beef, and marmalade and hard biscuits. Didn't see any bread for a long time, but that's what a typical ration was. The cooks would do all sorts of things, mind. They'd make a hash out of the corned beef. That was your primary staple diet, was corned beef.
Did you get any fresh vegetables or fruit?
Not at that particular time, not in Normandy, no.
No, right, okay.
Didn't get fresh vegetables for a long time, really.
Were you sort of aware that you were living on sort of, you know, field rations and rather fed up with it, or you sound quite...
Wasn't all that great, as I explained, but it's... You were hungry all the time, so you ate it, you see.
Mm. Did you get any, I won't say leisure time, but, you know, you got time off, as it were?
I'd answer concerts. Mm. They were put on at various places. So many men, not everybody go there. So many go. One particular place, Capiquet Airfield in Normandy, where... I saw Nellie Wallace and somebody else. I said, well, you wouldn't know him, you know, Nellie Wallace and what's his name, George Formby and all that, and he'd be up the front line performing.
Yeah. Really?
Oh yeah, Capiquet was virtually in the front line. Capiquet.
What was the concert like? Were you sitting
improvised setup in a barn or something like that?
How did he go down? I mean, how did they go down?
Well, it'd go down in a vehicle, like, you see.
Yeah. What was the reception like from all you soldiers?
Well, it was a break, you see, from monotony, because monotony is one of the bad things about it, because you had a lot of spare time hanging about and things like that, you see.
So what did you do in your spare time otherwise? Did you read?
Well, there was nothing to do in your spare time, really. Maintaining vehicles and things like that, or doing your washing. Do your own washing, like, with no facilities for washing.
What was the weather like all this time?
Like this.
Mm. Good weather.
Off and on, like, more or less like this all the time. Mm. Of course, one of the worst things was the smell. Dead bodies, cows bloated up and all that sort of thing, you know. Of course, that's another job engineers had to do, burying farm vehicles, farm animals, bulldozers, and taking them out and burying them, you know. Mm. Another thing was blue bottles, dysentery. Another thing was amongst the men, dysentery. Mm. There was thousands of blue bottles, thousands, not millions.
How did they try and combat dysentery?
Well, they couldn't do much about it, really. The men were bad, they went to a field hospital, obviously.
But were they very strict with you about cleanliness and I mean, you talk about clearing bodies and so on. I mean, was that a prerequisite of settling somewhere, as it were?
Bodies were... what happened to bodies, and they say... They used to... Well, the Pioneer Corps were responsible for a lot of that. They used to put a body in a blanket and put a label through his nose, stitch it through his nose, the blanket, and his religion and whatever he was. And if he left somewhere, then a padre would come along and sort it all out, you see.
So they were actually buried.
One thing that really upset us one night, we were moving up into position, they were digging graves, the Pioneer Corps, digging graves, you know, because they, well, obviously somebody knew. The powers that be probably knew that there was going to be quite a few casualties, and that was being dug ready for them. But bodies were buried haphazardly, especially Germans. In farmyards, everywhere they were buried. Feet up in the air, partly buried, all sorts of things. It was an air, really an air of desolation. Desolation. Really an air of desolation, really. It was macabre, look at it that way.
Did you see any of the French population? You know?
Very little French population. They'd all gone. Houses were left, you know, they were ruined. Of course, I think, according to some sources, the French didn't really want us there, because I think, personally myself, what I could see of it, I mean, in Bayeux, you could go in a shop and buy cheese, anything you like, vegetables, anything you liked. Because
that?
Then, of course, the German army was being supplied by people in Normandy. Normandy was a simple place in Kent, where you grow all the vegetables, all up in Evesham and places like that, where there was abundance of stuff like that, you see. I mean, the farming country, Normandy. So I think they rather resented it in many ways, in other ways they didn't. It all depends on what their attitude was, you see.
So, I mean, health and sanitation, obviously, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, you would be laying on water and so on. I mean, that was a vital part of what you did, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
What was the state of health of most people like? I mean,
What
was the state of health of most of the soldiers like? I mean,
pretty good state of health. Yeah, state of health. You had all these inoculations before you went out there.
So people seem to sort of cope quite well, really.
Oh yes, average. Yeah, average. You had ordinary sickness. A lot of people later on, I suppose, as you got into winter and so forth.
What about contact with home? Any letters or?
Oh yes, you had a green envelope out there, and you could write letters, but they were censored. A green envelope wasn't censored. They relied on your integrity not to discuss anything like.
So who did you write to when you wrote?
I wrote to my lady friend and my mother and father. That's about all I did write to, I think.
What did you tell them about what you were doing?
Oh no, just said I am well, everything's all right, something like that. Oh no.
Did anyone tell it like it was in their letters?
Well, I can't understand. A lot of people kept diaries. I mean, a lot of these officers kept diaries. That's why you got all these books being written. Quoting diaries. I mean, I read quite a... You're not supposed to have a diary. Nobody's supposed... All you're supposed to have on your being is your pay book. Your AB-64. Nothing else. And all the people had photographs, taking photographs. And all. Now, if they were captured, all these things, you see, it's understandable, that is, but they did keep diaries. I mean, I didn't write anything down. I just got on with it.
I mean, were sort of lice and pests and rats, I mean, were they a thing that followed you?
Not to my knowledge.
No, right. Okay. So, after the sort of early days, I mean, where did you proceed to?
Well, afterwards, then the Americans advanced and the British advanced, and it became what is known as the Falaise Gap. Now, this is where the Germans got trapped. 15th German Army got 7th German Army got trapped in Falaise. Now, everything was, it was a long road. All it basically in Falaise, it was a long road. On that road, there were thousands of soldiers, Germans, tanks, horses, all smashed up the kingdom come. A thing I'll never forget. And rocket firing typhoons going down there, knocking tanks out. And a Tiger tank weighed 70 tons, and a rocket hit that tank, and it would blow it to smithereens. And they were trapped in there, and they couldn't do nothing about it. And the road was absolutely littered, with dead bodies, horses, all sorts, everything.
How had you come to be there?
Well, we were, our division was advancing on the fillet's gap. You see, they're all bounced together now. They had no chance. You've got the Americans coming that way, and you've got the British going that way. And they tried to escape across the River Seine.
So what did your company actually do there? What was your part in the action?
Well, another thing, there's so many things going on, I can't remember. You must remember it's gone over 55 years, yes, or more than that.
But you went through the gap.
We all moved down the River Seine. Mm-hmm. And he got across the River Seine. Of course, we were more or less, we came out of action then, more or less. We didn't do much at all. We were more or less following up somebody else. There were so many troops moving forward. I mean, the main people moving forward at that particular time was our tanks and things like that, you see. We moved from Normandy. I've got to cut a story short because there's nothing really to tell. We moved from Normandy practically overnight to Antwerp. And we got into Antwerp in convoy. And in Antwerp, we're more or less refitting. And then he started dropping V2s on Antwerp. We were there for a not very long period of time, and the situation gets very confused then, because it wasn't actually fighting, it was skirmishing. They'd move, the Germans had put up a big fight, they'd shell you, mortar you and all the rest of it, then they'd move out.
Right.
Then you'd advance about 20 miles or so. Then you get the odd thing happening, was a armored car's knocked out by an 88mm gun or something like that. And that was an isolated incident. So you've been moving on for a long time.
Right. So going back to Normandy, how long were you there altogether in Normandy?
In Normandy from June till beginning of August, when the big move came on.
Right. Yeah. And you have no idea of the precise route you took, obviously. Yeah.
Well, one of the main routes is 240 up. It was known as 240. It was hat route. There was ship route. What do you call it? All marked up on things. Ship route, hat route. The main route was 240 up. That started in Normandy and ended in Hamburg.
Right. And that's the way you went?
That's the way we went, more or less.
Right, okay.
More or less. Mm.
So, it was, I mean, obviously the campaign was a success. Did it feel like that at the time?
Well, going through France, as I coming back, we were elated by people putting flowers on us, guard, getting on the vehicles, giving us eggs, giving us fruit, apples, all sorts. And flowers, garlanded with flowers. It was really difficult to say, really. Mm-hmm. It was an elation, you know. We thought, oh, well, the war won't be long now. Obviously, because he was retreating. As I said, he'd gone up to Antwerp and forced, and then he started to stiffen up again after Antwerp, when we got up to the River Maas and places like that.
So how did, you know, you were a young man, how did you sort of feel? Were you proud, or were you proud to be British?
Well, I don't think the right word is proud. I mean, we were getting on with it, you know. I don't think the word proud is adaptable for that. I think events are moving so fast, we thought the war was definitely going to be over by Christmas at least, you see.
Were you aware, I mean, you obviously had some information from your officers as to how the whole campaign through...
Oh, yes, you'd be told that...
How would they tell you? Would they gather you together at a parade? Or?
Well, not as your individual section, like, or something like that, because, as I said, each officer had a platoon, you see. There's about 30 or 40 men in a platoon. But events move that fast, you see. I mean, it was crowded. If events were crowded, you didn't know one thing and another. It's only facets of things you'd remember, like, you know, things that are out in your mind, and so many things happening.
Did you listen to the British Forces news on the radio?
Oh, yes, used to listen to that. They used to tell you certain things. War correspondents used to talk on there. Mm-hmm.
So that let you know a bit more about what was going on in Normandy, did it? Yeah.
Well, I would say at some particular times, people in this country knew more about it than what we knew about it, what was going on.
So you were never injured?
Hmm?
Am I right in thinking you were never injured?
Well, I was in an accident. That comes on practically after the war ended.
Oh, right. Okay. But not in Normandy?
No.
Yeah. So do you know when, what time you actually got to Antwerp? What?
September the 3rd, 1940. Beg your pardon, 44.
Right. What was Antwerp like then? What state was it in?
Well, Antwerp in general is okay, because you see, what they were afraid of in Antwerp is they thought the Germans were going to blow up all the dock installations, like they did in Cherbourg, but they didn't do in Antwerp, as far as I can understand. Of course, they had to sweep all the approaches to four mines, the Navy did, for Antwerp. You see, one of the logistics was that most of the supplies were coming off the beaches. And we're driving hundreds of miles with these supplies. And in fact, shortly after, before Antwerp, we'd run out of supplies. And they grounded certain troops, what they call grounded. All their vehicles were taken off and to supply other divisions. There wasn't enough staff going forward to supply all the divisions. So they were grounded. Because all the supplies were coming from the beaches in Normandy, you see. Antwerp was a vital port. That was a vital port. Mm-hmm. That had to be captured before anything could come through. And then, that's when we went on the frozen food, German frozen food, cauliflowers. That's the first time we ever seen frozen food. We found these factories and we were eating frozen cauliflowers and all the rest of it.
So what was it like? I mean, you drove into Antwerp.
We were on an airfield in Antwerp. And, of course, what happened in Antwerp, there was so much confusion going from Normandy to Antwerp, but only five of us got there, five vehicles got there. And we'd been driving all night, 240 miles we actually travelled from the time we left Normandy, and more or less non-stop to Antwerp. We'd stopped here and there, but we were outside when we got in Antwerp. We got in the wood and we just got out of the vehicles, got out and went to sleep. The following morning we found out there was a German regiment in this wood, the other side of the wood. Of course they'd moved on then, they didn't realise we were there But then he started using his V-2 rockets. And apparently, in the Rex cinema, and I was in the Rex cinema the day before this happened, saw a show or something, he dropped a V-2 rocket on the Rex cinema and 700 soldiers got killed in this particular Rex cinema.
Allied soldiers.
British more or less, the British front. And, of course, dribs and drabs, checking vehicles over and one thing or another, and equipment and refitting and one thing or another. We were there about a week, I should imagine. Then we moved on then. Of course, they started to stiffen up then, the Germans. They started to make a line front, you see. This was coming up the River Maas.
Did you see much of Antwerp itself?
No. The only one night I went out there to see that cinema, to see that show.
Did you see the frozen food?
Yes.
So how did you get that? Did the cooks then take that food and cook it all?
Well, the cooks cooked the food. I mean, you had a cook in each section,
It was a relief to get to Antwerp then.
Well, we thought, oh, this is it. It won't be long now. But then, of course, after Antwerp, we came up, coming up to the big airdrop now.
Right. We'll stop Reel 4. That's the end of Reel 4, Walter Cuss.